So today we're kind of going to give everybody an introduction to the Robbinsdale Revisited podcast. This idea just kind of came not really out of nowhere. I've been thinking about a podcast for years. I created a little book about Robbinsdale. I've been doing the Robbinsdale Historical Society website and trying to tell the story through various blog entries and old newspaper clippings. You know, we have this little museum here in real close to downtown Robbinsdale on Railroad Avenue and 42nd. And we're open from 10 to 3 on Fridays and Saturdays. So whenever somebody comes in, we give them a little tour. So I feel like I've been telling the story of Robbinsdale for years now. I've always been a fan of history podcasts, and it seems like Robbinsdale is ripe for a history podcast.
Well, Robbinsdale is ripe for a history podcast, and you have so many great stories, and you have been involved for a long time. Pete, how long have you been involved with the Robbinsdale Historical Society?
I think I wandered in here in about 2010. Or 2011, I knew that Robbinsdale had a little historical society. They didn't have a website at the time, but somebody told me about it. And there was a cafe on our main drag here on West Broadway that was called the Birdtown Cafe. I decided to come here and have lunch with my sister and my mom. We grew up here. After lunch, we just decided we'd go visit the Historical Society. And I had always wondered about this water tower that was down in the neighborhood I grew up in McNair Manor. And I wondered where it was, because there was a big hill that we all used to bike down and race down when we were kids. And it was called Tanker Hill. And I figured that the water tower was the reason it was called Tanker Hill. And there was one of our volunteers here, Raleigh Haywood, greeted me at the door. And Diane Jacobson McGee was here. And they just dug in and found me pictures of this water tower. Now, they couldn't tell me exactly where it was, but they found me all these pictures. And then eventually that led to finding a map that showed the water tower. But I looked around the room and I thought, this place is amazing. This collection is so incredible. And the people here can tell me stories about all these things. And I had been a paper boy in Robbinsdale. And at that time, it seemed like everybody in town was over 60 or 70. And they would all be waiting for me at the front door or on their porch when I came to bring their paper or when I was coming to collect. And they would just start talking and telling me, well, you know, that used to be here and this used to belong to this guy. And there was this artist who lived over there. They would just tell me these stories. And I kind of got that feeling again when I came into the Robbinsdale Historical Society. And it's just a place that has always been full of character, that people remember the stories that they tell about downtown and about the former mayor and about the old streetcars. It's just, it's been a place with a story, which in some ways I think makes it a little more unique among our suburbs here in the Minneapolis area. You know, I always think of there's suburbs with names like Eden Prairie and Golden Valley. And one of the things about Robbinsdale is it's named after a man. And so there's all these stories about the founder of Robbinsdale and why they named it after him.
Oh, and his stories are here. So this organization and this museum has really become a great community asset. And we should mention that it's all volunteer. So you got started as a volunteer and over the years got more and more involved. And you've done a lot of great projects. Do you want to share about any of the projects you've done?
Well, over the years, we created a little picture book in the Arcadia Images of America series. And that actually led to a second one, because one of our characters here in town is Captain Billy, who started Whiz Bang Magazine and also went on to start True Confessions Magazine, Modern Mechanics. Fawcett Publishing got into the comic book business, and by 1940, they were famous for their Captain Marvel hero. So doing the little Robbinsdale picture book led me to Breezy Point, where there is a Captain Billy had bought Breezy Point and built it in the 1920s, and his house is still there. And when I went to go take a look at his house, the owner of Breezy Point, whose name was Bob Spizo, says to me, well, Pete, you know, we have a lot of old pictures here and we could make a book about Captain Billy in Breezy Point Resort. So that led to another little picture book, and we have both of those in the museum. We, at one time, we created a National Register of Historic Places application for the Old Terrace Theater, and the amount of work and research that went into that, you know, just dug me more into Robbinsdale history. And that led to us taking on our collections, because as we looked around and our volunteers would be here every Friday and somebody would come in, they'd bring us a box of stuff. And one of our volunteers, Raleigh Haywood, who was kind of our museum curator and curmudgeon for many years, would say, oh, put it over there. And then we'd start going through this stuff and we realized that we needed a system. So that led us to this collections project that is stretched out for, what, 5 years now? And we hired Crystal Boyd as our contractor, and she went and put a little number on everything in the museum. And we have a little description for all the 3D objects in the museum. We had a couple volunteers who went through our files and scanned in the files, so you can see a lot of the things that are in our files on our website. We built this monstrous WordPress website that it really is kind of a guide to all the things in the museum and to Robbinsdale history. The search function is great. If you're looking for a personality or a street or a building, you can just kind of type in the search function there and whatever we have in the museum will come up. And then we just kind of continued to work on our physical building here. We've added display cases and rearranged everything and try and keep it cleaned up and give people something to look at when they come in here.
Well, it's a really fun place to visit on a Saturday, to come with your family, to look at all the cool stuff. So if you can come in person, I definitely recommend it. I had so much fun going through the collections. But if you're far away, you can see a lot of it online too. Your website really is amazing. So the Robbinsdale Historical Society website, or a website called MN Collections, like Minnesota Collections, you can see a lot of records on there too. So you've done buildings, you've done publications, you've done collections, a little programming too, and some work with MnDOT.
Yeah, one of our members some years ago, we partnered with the Lions Club to just basically clean up Grazier Park, which was this WPA park that had one of these beehive fireplaces and has all this beautiful stonework. It was called the Robbinsdale Rock Garden as a nickname, but it's actually named after Carl Grazier, who was one of the engineers for Lilac Way or Highway 100 that was built in the 30s. And they had these giant work crews out there and they built these Lilac Way parks. But the one in Robbinsdale was the most spectacular out of the 7 parks or so that was built. And it had this water feature and these stone picnic tables, great big beehive fireplace, something that is, we call it the bandstand, but it was really meant to be an overlook. And it was explained to me by the MnDOT historian at one point that what you were actually overlooking was the highway. I thought, are you overlooking Twin Lake? I can't quite see it from here. What am I overlooking? I can't see downtown from here, but no, you were supposed to be overlooking the highway. And when I was a kid, we still went out there for Cub Scouts. It was a bigger park at that time. The highway hadn't quite eaten up so much of it. But now, of course, you can't see the highway because it's behind this sound wall and behind this little water feature that's there. But one of our members had noticed that they had dug through all the documents when they were building Highway 100 or rebuilding it again. And they found that they dismantled the picnic tables at Grazier Park and they put them in storage. And the intent was always to bring them back after the construction was done. They just never did. So 20 years later, she's pounding on MnDOT's door and talking to the MnDOT historian, and they find these documents and say, yeah, we had agreed to put them back. Let's look into that. But not only did they put them back then, they partnered with us and with the Lions Club and with a local church, and we brought in apprentice stonemasons, these teenagers, and they rebuilt the picnic table pads. Then they brought in real stonemasons and rebuilt the picnic tables, restored the beehive, went down and restored parts of the rock garden. They used pressure cleaners to clean up all the stones. And Grazier Park now is not that far off from the way it was when it was actually built. The water feature still isn't running, but that's complicated. And we've just continued to be involved with the city, with the Lions Club, trimming out the weeds, doing plantings, raising money for some of the trees. And these are based on Carl Grazier's design and a guy named Nichols, who designed roadside parks all over the state. So that's been a wonderful project. And the fact that we were able to save that, that it's going to be there for future generations, just warms the cockles of my heart, you know, after most things get torn down. So when everything you can save that's of historic value in this city is worth saving.
Oh, and you're such a great partner in that. Now, I grew up in Golden Valley, so I have to say I'm from the neighboring town, and it is so inspiring to see everything you've done in Robbinsdale, because you really do help to preserve that history and bring it to people and help them learn about it. It's an amazing service. Your community is really lucky to have it. And so looking forward for the podcast, I'll be behind the scenes a little bit, doing some of the recording and producing, and Pete will mostly be sharing the great history of Robbinsdale. We wanted to give a little overview of what's coming up next for you in the podcast. If you stick around, we've got a lot of great history. And what is that going to look like, Pete?
Well, this is the part where I just start talking and then somebody waves at me and say, okay, that's enough. You know, Robbinsdale has a wonderful story, and that's what gives it its character. That's what sets it apart. The question is, where do you begin that story? If you think of this land before we started drawing lines on maps, you've got this kind of rolling hills, you've got a few lakes, you've got a lot of wetland and bogs and swamps, you've got some stands of oak and oak savanna, there's some prairie. We know that in the more recent history, we had Dakota and Ojibwe people going back and forth through here. Later on, you have some Métis that are using the Botno Road. But if you begin with the first description of, you know, European settlers, you've got a guy named Colonel Stevens who helped found the city of Minneapolis. And as we get into the state of Minnesota and Hennepin County, and then Hennepin County breaks down to townships, this area was all in the Crystal Lake Township. The way Stevens described it was prosaic and uneventful. The settlers just came in. They took up claims. There wasn't much to bother or molest them. They had some problems with grasshoppers, but not as bad as some other places. And he kind of just leaves it at that, like not much was happening here. But we know that the farmers that came in, the settlers, we had a guy named Parker who was a Mexican-American War veteran, and some people named Melbourne. And then we had some people named Shumway and Stillman. And so you had maybe 15 families that had owned the land in this area. And the oldest thing in Robbinsdale by far is the Melbourne Barn, which is out there behind the Osterhoos Publishing House. And it was built in 1850, and it's still standing. It was used as a warehouse for their print shop for a number of years. But there's just not that many pre-Civil War buildings in this area, or even in Hennepin County. So, I mean, it's by far the oldest thing in Robbinsdale. And to tell you the truth, I just like to go look at it and daydream and think about what Robbinsdale was then. So you've got these relatively large farms, and they become prosperous. They're growing sorghum, they're growing hay, they're growing potatoes, and there's some vegetables, and they're coming down to the markets in Minneapolis through that Botno Road. And of course, Pierre Botno is just up there in Osseo. There's some contact with native peoples, and generally these would happen when you would have a group of Dakota that would come up to a house, and they would walk in and they'd sit in the kitchen, and there's these accounts of the Stillman family, and they would just feed them. There'd be some exchange of words back and forth, and then they would leave. But that was the only accounts that we have of any contact with native peoples. We do have a mortar and pestle that's in our museum that somebody found just behind their house on France Avenue. Beyond that, we just don't have much in the way of stories. When the Dakota conflict breaks out, the settlers in this area were really nervous. One group went to this farm that was called the Dutton Farm, and it was just down 42nd over in Crystal. Another group went out to Pierre Botno's house, and they begged the soldiers at Fort Snelling to come in this area to protect them. Again, there wasn't any hostilities right here, but they were worried about it. And somehow they got a hold of a cannon, whether it was from Pierre Botno or from the soldiers at Fort Snelling. And they would take this cannon down to about where 42nd and West Broadway is, and they would just fire it off from time to time to let everybody know they had a cannon. And that seemed to give them enough security to come back and start their farming again. Over the years, a couple of these cannonballs have turned up, and we have one of them here in the Robbinsdale Historical Society. So these farmers are doing pretty well. Minneapolis is growing. That's their main market. But as Minneapolis grows, it starts annexing territory. As it moves north, it annexes the area that we call Camden now. And the people in Robbinsdale, Crystal, New Hope, they're getting nervous. They don't really want to be annexed, mostly because they don't want to pay taxes. I mean, really, all suburbs are because we don't want to pay taxes, or, you know, we want to separate ourselves from the larger town because otherwise you're going to have to pay taxes for things like a lamplighter that was going up and down Lindale Avenue. And heck, that might even be $1 a year to pay for that guy. The farmers in the area form a little thing called Crystal Village. And this takes up a fair amount of Crystal Lake Township, all of it that wasn't annexed by the city of Minneapolis. Crystal Village doesn't last very long because in about the middle of this time, Andrew B. Robbins is coming through town, and he's been he's a Civil War veteran. He's an entrepreneur. At one time, he was the president of the bank in Wilmer, Minnesota. He'd gone out there with the railroads, and he became the mayor of Wilmer. He moves back to Minneapolis, and he's become a state senator and a state surveyor, too. And as he's coming through the rolling hills north and west of the city, and he looks around at these lakes, and he says, you know, this is a perfect place for a real estate development. I've had this idea in my head for a while. He'd been out east and he'd seen these, what they called streetcar suburbs. So just outside the big cities out east, you'd have these little towns and they were serviced by a streetcar that would go into town. It's a bedroom community. And he says, this is the perfect spot for that. He gets off the train. The next time he's coming through, there was a guy named Parker who had donated some land to the Burlington Northern and they had built a little depot there. He talks to some area farmers. He buys up 90 acres of land. The other thing about Andrew B. Robbins is he's married to Adelaide Walker Robbins, and the Walker is from T.B. Walker, who we associate with the Walker Arts Center, who we associate with the Minneapolis Public Library, who's about the 18th richest man in the world at the time. So whenever A.B. needed a little influx of cash for whatever project he was working on, he could always go to TB and use those connections to create an investment capital. He builds a giant house on the west side of Twin Lake, about where Highway 100 crosses it. And this thing is a fantasy of turrets and gables and dormers all over the place. And there's a little throughway where the horses can, you know, drive through and stay out of the rain and drop people off and then go back to the little barn that's behind it. There's a little windmill behind it, so he's bringing up water that way. The place has indoor plumbing. It has electricity. It has gas. It's a marvel for the area at the time. And this place gets built in about 1890. And Robin starts working on other development plans. He starts working on his streetcar, and then we actually know that he laid some of the tracks for it. When the streetcar was first built, you started about 42nd and West Broadway, and you head down to about where 26th and West Broadway is. So it starts with just a horse-drawn trolley, then he gets a gasoline-powered trolley, and eventually he electrifies it. He starts a small streetcar factory here in Robbinsdale. He starts something called Hubbard Manufacturing, which is a good-sized factory. They're building chairs, they're building desks, and they're building boxes that fold up. So instead of a cardboard box, you have a wooden box, and it folds up, and you can stack a whole bunch of them in your cart. Then he attracts the Lutheran Seminary to town. A guy named Lars Nasse had come to town a couple of years earlier, and he brought his uncle with him, who was an architect, and that's who designed the Crystal Village Hall, which later becomes the Robbinsdale Village Hall, and the Lutheran Seminary gets built. And about this time, Robbins is getting more and more ambitious, and the farmers are getting nervous about paying taxes again, because Robbins is thinking, we need sidewalks, and he's building sidewalks. This streetcar is not paying for itself. I mean, we're getting some money from the fares, but we're going to have to support this, and we need to relay those tracks. And the farmers are all like, you know, I'm not sure that we want to pay taxes for this. We live all the way over in New Hope. We don't even come over to this side of the village. And so it's decided that Crystal Village is going to dissolve. The farmers that are interested in becoming part of Robbinsdale and the little bit of development that Robbins has, the houses he's built, the rental houses, those people are all going to come into this new entity called Robbinsdale. They have a meeting. They dissolve Crystal Village. They create Robbinsdale in 1893. Then, you know, they get a little bit of a boom. They start building houses all over town. A few more businesses move into town. We get a blacksmith. We have a general store. We have a meat market. We've got a couple dry goods businesses, a feed barn. We have a tiny little commercial area, but it's really the only commercial area out here until you get way down to North Minneapolis. And then, of course, going north, Osseo would be the next place where you would have any sort of a store or business or anything like that. So Robbins brings his whole family here, and he's got five daughters. They all graduate from the University of Minnesota. He's tirelessly promoting the town, but he keeps running into setbacks. The Lutheran Seminary burns down. It was this, you know, great big building with a tower. It looked like, I imagine, something like Duluth Central High School looked like. But it burns to the ground. The students go over. We get a new hotel, and the students spend some time having classes in the hotel. It was called the Columbia Hotel, and it was a temperance hotel, so they didn't serve any liquor there. At this time, Robbinsdale is getting well-known for its saloons. Most of them are down there by Crystal Lake. Some of them are closer into town. But the saloons are thriving because Minneapolis has various liquor laws, you know, like we're not going to serve any beer on Sundays. Well, come on over to Robbinsdale and we'll serve it then. And the state has liquor laws, too, that says you're not going to serve any beer on Sundays. Well, Robbinsdale is known for flouting these liquor laws, and we attract big crowds over here to Robbinsdale for drinking. And the town gets a terrible reputation. At one point, the attorney general for the state of Minnesota is threatening to crack down and come and arrest the mayor if he doesn't start enforcing the law. Compromises are made, but you've got people who are watching the saloons all the time. And in the elections every year, you've got the dry faction and you've got the saloon faction. The dry factions tend to be Republicans, and the saloon people tend to either be populists or Democrats. And whoever gets elected, well, that tends to be where the post office goes. So, you know, if a Republican's elected, it goes into the Nasset store. If a Democrat's elected, it goes into the Swift drugstore on the main street. But Robbinsdale is thriving. We get a little bit of a bump when we get to this depression in the 1890s. But the Robbins girls are actually wonderful to watch because they're really busy in the local affairs, and they tend to show up in the, we get a little newspaper. A guy named Thomas Girling comes to town and creates this newspaper called Picturesque Robbinsdale. He gives you, you know, the overview of the politics. He seems to really like that. He gives you an overview as to what's going on in town, who just got a bicycle, you know, and who is having a party, and who played violin at the Christmas gathering, and who's putting on a play. We have these accounts of plays being put on at the Robbins Mansion. And as these women start getting married, we have these accounts of these great big weddings where they wet down the streets so that it doesn't kick up dust on all the attendees. And, you know, carriages arrive, and pretty soon we get automobiles. We have a family named the Trump family, and they open up a hardware store on the main street. They rent out boats on Twin Lake. They got maybe 20, 30 boats down there, and you can go to the hardware store. You can pick up some keys to the locks on the boat, and you can pick up some oars, and then you can go take your boat out and go fishing on Twin Lake. So people from Minneapolis start coming out here to use it as kind of a recreation area. A guy named Jay Nash moves to Crystal Lake, and he opens up a bathhouse there. Crystal Lake is in a lot better shape. It seems like from the moment Robbinsdale became a village, we started doing terrible things to Crystal Lake. We cut down the hill that heads up toward North Moriah Hospital to make it easier for ox carts to get up it. And we took all that fill and we dumped it into the lake. But the lake is still in good enough shape. The springs haven't been messed with yet. And so it becomes a popular spot for people from Minneapolis to come out. And you can rent a little locker, and then you can go down to the beach, and, you know, it's going to cost you a dime or something. And maybe they got a little boat you can rent there, too. They have a great big toboggan water slide, and they have some other toys that you can play with in the lake. People just flock here, and then there's a group called the Modern Woodsmen of America, and they buy up a piece of land to the west of Crystal Lake, and they plat it out so you can buy your campsite. And then you come out there with a tent, and it starts its own little newspaper. They have these woodsmen's camps all over the United States. The woodsmen are a strange organization. They're actually still around, I believe. But I remember reading the list of things that you could be excluded. If you couldn't be a woodsman, for instance, if you were a Pullman porter, which, you know, and I guess they just considered it dangerous, or maybe they were trying to exclude African-Americans because that was the job. But they didn't exclude you if you were Jewish. They excluded you if you were a carpenter. They excluded you if you were a mason. Just a strange list. But anyway, they got enough people there to make their own little newspaper, and they would have these events all summer and bands playing. the area is getting some notoriety just as a place to come and get away from the city. Robbins had tried a couple other manufacturing ventures. The Hubbard manufacturing plant was eventually bought by Sweat Manufacturing. If you follow that company genealogy, eventually you'll get to Honeywell. But now our factory here burns down. And so now we really are a bedroom community without any industry or anything to bother you. So you're going to come out here, you're going to build your little house, and hopefully you'll just commute back and forth along the trolley line to Minneapolis. As the Robbins women get older and start getting married, they get even more involved in civic affairs. Edith Robbins becomes a teacher and eventually the principal at our little K-8 school. The school was built in 1890, and it's this great big brick building. We had a little one-room schoolhouse on the Stillman Farm before that, but this one, it has all of the accoutrements you associate with buildings of that time, stone arches and stone steps to get up to them, and a little bell tower with a gable and these huge windows. And we're bringing in kids from as far away as Corcoran. So we've got a large student population. In 1920, Edith Robbins ends up running for the school board and is one of the first women elected to a school board. The Parker School is eventually renamed the Robbinsdale Public School as they keep putting additions on it, although you couldn't tell that you didn't have the look of that 1890s school building because they just kept putting additions on it, like starting in 1914, and they were still adding on to it when you get up into the 50s and 60s. But it was a beautiful old building, and a lot of people still remember the older parts of the building and the skylights and the little gymnasium area and the way the steps were worn from years of people walking on them. And it was kind of the sentimental heart of the Robbinsdale School District. It was also where the school district headquarters was.
Thanks for listening. I'm Crystal Boyd. Robbinsdale Revisited is brought to you by the Robbinsdale Historical Society. Our little history museum is located at 4915 42nd Avenue North in the heart of Robbinsdale. We're open Fridays and Saturdays from 10 to 3. You can also visit us online at robbinsdale.org. You found this episode, so you know where to find the next one.
Bicycle into the city every Saturday to see our friends. Back home, sitting hand in hand, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, when the evening ends, in Robbinsdale, in Robbinsdale. Ooh.
Our theme music is provided by Gabe Barnett and Them Rounders.